Today we're asking the question, what does the American dream mean to children in Illinois?
I think the American dream was you have to do better in life, because if you don't, you're going to have to start redoing school and college.
I think the American dream is to have equal rights and be able to do anything.
Following your dreams and being able to do what you want to do.
And we're asking, how can adults encourage children in the pursuit of their dreams? Parents, we especially want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455 or tweet to 21st Show. We'll be speaking with a child psychologist and a social worker to get their advice. Plus, the head of the Chicago Urban League, Sherry Runner, joins us. It's the organization's 100th anniversary this year, and we talked to her about banking diversity, the state of Black America, and more. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today, we're talking about dreams, especially dreams that kids have. And we're asking the question, what does the American dream mean to children in Illinois? Our question for adults who are listening is, what do you do to encourage your children or children in your life when they share their dreams? Listen. That's one answer we've already heard from Cheryl on Twitter. You can weigh in, too. We'd especially love to hear from parents and teachers. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Or like Cheryl, you can tweet to 21st Show. That's 21st Show is our handle. We're going to be talking with a psychologist and a social worker who's going to be giving some advice for us. But first, the 21st team took a trip to East Central Illinois, to Danville, to the Boys and Girls Club there. And we talked with a group of young children about what dreams they have.
I'm Miss Gina. This is Anthony, Nasira, Jaylee, Soraya, and Colton. I mean, they're all either in third grade or going into third grade, going into fourth grade.
I want to be a singer and a dancer when I grow up.
How about you?
Police officer and a judge and a member of the jury and like a police operator. And I also used to wanted to be a president, but
I wanted to be famous by singing.
What kind of songs?
Gospel.
Some people might want to have peace on earth, and some people might not want to get bullied by other people.
I think the American dream was when you start to grow up, you have to do better in life, because if you don't, you're going to have to start redoing school and college. And then later in on life, you can't do anything because you're not smart enough.
If you get straight A's and get to college and don't drop out, you'll probably do what you wanted to do.
We were at the Boys and Girls Club because the 21st is taking part in a project called Redream. You may have heard past segments we've done on it on our airwaves. It's a series of conversations happening nationally about what the American dream looks like. And in a few weeks, our 21st staff is going back to the Boys and Girls Club in Danville for an event with the young people there. Joining us now is the executive director of the club, Rob Gifford. Rob, thanks for being with us. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi, Nyla. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. We were just hearing the voices of some of your young charges from the third grade class at the club. Obviously, you're not their parent, but you're working with these kids every day. And as you listen to them talking about those dreams, as you heard that, I wonder what was going through your mind?
Well, you know, it's great. Number one, you know, one of the things that we try to do here through our core programs, one of those being education, is to teach kids that they can reach their dreams, but that education is very important. So it was good to hear that some of the kids had that in their dreams and the things that they need to do to accomplish those dreams.
How do you think the children at the club think about their future? And what do you think their life, what they want their life to be like when they get older, as you spend hours with these kids every day?
Sure.
And I'm sure a lot of those conversations happen.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, if you look at kids, I think kids, especially when they're younger, their dreams tend to be more of things that they see, like a singer, like a famous singer, or a movie star, or something along that line. And I think as they get older, they start to formulate a little bit more concrete dreams, maybe something like a policeman or a teacher or a public servant or something along that line.
Right. And, you know, as I mentioned, your team at the Boys and Girls Club is partnering with the 21st staff show and WILL to have some conversations about what the American dream means to them. And we have them fill out worksheets to write about what their dream was and what challenges they face and whether they believe the American dream is achievable. And a lot of the kids said they wanted to be NBA stars or cheerleaders. And I was wondering what what your approach is to supporting children in the club when you hear them say things like that, especially older kids?
Sure. You know, you're supportive. I mean, the main thing is that you're supportive of their dreams, because that is their dream. But you also talk about the things, for instance, you know, even NBA stars and NFL football players, at some point in life, that sports career is going to be done, and they have to have something else to fall back on. So we always talk to them about that's a great dream to have, but, you know, be prepared for after that segment of your dream is done, what's the next type of dream that you want? What's the next thing that you're going to do after that dream?
We're speaking with Rob Giffert. He's the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club in Danville, Illinois. We're talking about children's dreams, and our question for those of you listening, for adults who are listening, is what do you do to encourage children when they share their dreams with you? Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can join our conversation. You can tweet as well to 21st Show. And I wanted to bring someone else as well into the conversation. Sandra Waxman is a psychology professor at Northwestern University's Feinberg College of Arts and Sciences. Sandra, welcome to the 21st. Sandra?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. You've got a lot of experience working with young children. I thought we should start with, what do we know about how, let's start with younger children in particular. We were just hearing from third graders, so kids who are, you know, maybe around 8 years old or so, 8 or 9 years old. What do we know about how young children process the world, and even if they're how they think about the future?
Well, I guess I would say that those are two kind of separate questions. Let me start out by saying I think that this project is really, really exciting because, and I'll get to your question in just a second.
Sure.
But it's exciting because people, aside from researchers in deeply controlled situations, haven't really looked broadly and shared broadly what young children see as their futures or see as the I guess you could say the goals or the limits of their futures and how that relates to what they're doing now. And that's a skill to be able to dream about the future and think about it that we can see with kids who are in third grade, maybe even kindergartners, who can tell you what they want to be when they grow up. But we know that children who are much, much younger, even toddlers, have role models, right? And these are individuals that they aspire to be like. And that's something that's kind of a beautiful, natural consequence of growing up human. You form attachments with the very close others in your family and community, and you find some of them, if not all of them, to be role models, and you aspire to be like them. And so I think what we see first is learning within a family or within a close sort of extended family network, like who you want to be like. And some of that is emotionally who you want to be like, you know, this individual is, you know, easier for me to learn from or more fun for me to be with than this other one. But then going beyond individuals and personality kinds of things, the question is, how do I imagine myself as a grown-up? And I think really tiny kids have a hard time imagining themselves.
Right. Well, I'm thinking about especially really young kids. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a movie with one of our producers about astronauts and space travel, and she brought her 3-year-old with us, and he was pretty psyched about space. And afterwards, she said to him, "Do you want to be an astronaut?" And his response is, "No, I want to be a spaceship." So I think that I mean, there's obviously a certain age where imagination. I was going to ask you about the age at which imagination takes off, and kids are sort of, there's a phase where it's really just sky's the limit, and they're just, how important it is to be encouraging kids at that time when they're just thinking, well, I can do anything, really.
Yeah, let's see. So with regard to encouraging kids that they can do anything, I think they can do encouraging kids to dream about the possibility is a wonderful thing. And kids from different family environments and kids from different social classes and economic classes get very different images. And so when we talk about what parents can support, we're also talking about what parents themselves believe are the, quote, good paths or the good aspirations for their young kids. And so, you know, as a mother of daughters, 3 daughters, I could say that, you know, I felt like it was important to remind them that they could do jobs that I didn't do, or jobs that were predominantly astronaut-type jobs, mostly male, right? But that there are burdens or hurdles to get there, right? That said, there are burdens and hurdles to get there for all kids. I just don't, you know, you've got to be a science whiz and you've got to be, you know, really dedicated to a long path of training and have the family circumstance to allow you to do that kind of like lots and lots of education. But I don't think we should put that right front and center for young kids who want to be a rocket ship or a astronaut, right? Mm-hmm. I think we should let them dream big and give them images, give them role models, and give them ideas about dreaming big. Let's see. Your other question, though, was about how early kids could have those kinds of aspirations. Am I right?
Yes. At what age? Because I think there's a, I think around 3 or 4, and I think this is also maybe something of an, it's a kind of an, a uniquely American thing that we ask kids what they want to do when they grow up. I don't know that in other cultures people necessarily are asking children that question when they're young, but
right,
I wonder,
exactly.
Yeah, I wonder at what age you think that kids really start to formulate maybe more concrete ideas about aspirations.
Oh, that is a really tough question, and I may defer to your next expert for that one, but let me just say that there's a difference between their aspirations, which are kind of concrete, like, you know, I want to be an astronaut or I want to be a nurse, let's say, versus the range of other jobs or other careers or life paths that are similar to that, but you just haven't learned the word for example. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So opening the kids' ideas to the various kinds of things that you can do for a living is probably one thing. But what you can do for a living is really different than dreams, right?
Sure.
You know, part of the American dream is you want to be, in our view, in my generation's view, is you want to have a house. You want your children to do better than you did. You want them to go to school, like that young boy was talking about in the interludes that you, in the interview that you put in there. But another part of a dream is like, how do you imagine the world? You know, how do you imagine yourself? And I think letting kids think about that, opening their minds to, well, what if it were possible for ... is a really wonderful thing. And you can start those conversations as early as 3. I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. Rob, is right. Rob, as you're thinking about this, and you've got a wide age range of children that are with you year-round, and especially this summer, but you have from kindergarten to, you know, 16 to 17-year-olds with you all at the Boys and Girls Club. How important is it for you all to have role models maybe versus having these conversations like we've been having with the kids over the past couple of weeks?
You know, I think both are important, and I'd have to agree with Sandra to an extent that, you know, I think aspirations at a young age are the things that kids look towards. And I think, for me, I think it's once they start to get into more of a social atmosphere, you know, whether that's school or other things, where they start to learn about different things that, you know, that they like and that, you know, something that would interest them. I wouldn't call it a career decision, but I would call it
right.
You know, an aspiration. That, I think that's a good term to use.
Right.
But I think as they get older, I know for us here, you know, we never want to discourage a child from whatever their, you know, what they think they want to grow up to be, what their dream is. But we also, I think, empowering them with information, you know, talking about other opportunities as well and the things that they need to do, I think are important. But I think you
right.
do that at different levels at different ages. So, you know, for a young child, some of those things can be a little overwhelming. But as you start to get into middle school and you start to get into high school, I think it's an even more important age for, you know, that youth at that point to learn about the things that they're going to have to do to make that dream happen, to learn about the speed bumps, to learn about different
right.
things that, you know, that they have to look out for and do, and to learn about, you know, the type of work that they're going to have to put into making that dream come true.
Robert, yeah, what age are you starting to see with, you say it's around 5th or 6th grade, or is it older, where you start to see kids maybe start to actualize a little bit more about what they want to do and start talking a little bit more about challenges and, well, in order to do this, I'd have to do this?
Well, you know, I'm amazed. I've been in this position for 3.5 years, and I'm amazed at what 6-, 7-, and 8-year-olds understand about the world. You know, we have a wide variety of children from different social backgrounds and, you know, different family backgrounds.
Right.
We have 70% of our kids are single from single-family households. So You know, they see a lot of different things from more people than just their family, like I was blessed with as a child. But, you know, for them, I think as they start to get into maybe seventh and eighth grade, maybe early high school, I think they really start to get, you know, a little bit of a firmer grasp on what it takes to get to some of these things. Now, you heard with our third graders, we had anything from, you know, cheerleaders and football players to, you know, presidents, which that, you know, that's always a broad one too, because they see that in the world. But teachers, police officers, and things, they start to understand the things that are important, I think, in life. So I think specifically around the seventh or eighth grade is when they start to formulate a little bit better. And part of that's also due to the school systems, I think, you know, how good your school system is and making
sorry, this is Sandy. I just couldn't, I'm not hearing you very well. What age did you say that you thought it started to come?
I would say about middle school, seventh and eighth grade is when they really start to get maybe a little bit more of a grasp on, you know, the difference between an aspiration and something that maybe would be something that would be concrete for them as an
right.
adult.
That's Sandy, Sandra Waxman, and Rob Gifford. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with them, bring a social worker into the conversation as well. So we're speaking with Rob Gifford. He's the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club of Danville. Sandra Waxman is a psychology professor at Northwestern University's Weinberg School of Arts and Sciences. Stay tuned to the 21st, and you can join our conversation. You can tweet to 21st Show. You can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455 as we're talking about children and dreams and the role adults play in nurturing that. Stay tuned. This conversation is going to continue in just a few minutes.
The 21st is made possible by the library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, supporting librarianship and the training of librarians, instructing instructors as they embed the library into classrooms and beyond the campus across the globe. The University Library at Illinois.
For tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Right now we're talking about children's dreams and how adults in their lives affect them. How can we encourage kids? How do we get in the way? We're especially asking parents and teachers to share their stories and advice with us. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21st Show. My guests are Rob Gifford. He's the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club of Danville, Illinois. So we've also been speaking with Sandra Waxman. She's a psychology professor at Northwestern University and joining us from Chicago. And we wanted to bring someone else into this conversation. From Decatur, Kristen Kim is a licensed clinical social worker. She works in adolescent behavioral health at St. Mary's Hospital and with us as well. Kristen, welcome to the 21st, too.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to ask all three of you a question. Do you think it even is comes from a particular vantage point to even be asking the question, what is your dream? Do you think that this is a question that all children in America are being asked these days? Rob, let me start with you.
I don't know that everybody's asking that question. It depends, I think, on the family dynamic, I think, is a big part of that. My parents always encouraged our dreams and talked to us about dreams. I think a lot of my kids don't have that opportunity in their family life. I think some do. But I think more kids need to be asked about what their dream is.
Sandra?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think it's a pretty culture-specific question to ask a young person, you know, a toddler all the way up to an adolescent, what is your dream? And I think, again, that difference between dreams and aspirations. What do you want to be with you when you grow up? Very pragmatic. That's often a question we don't ask individuals who are living in families or in cultures or communities where it's an expectation that what you're going to be is somehow or pretty directly shaped by the line of work that your family is in, right? So if you think of small communities and you're a farmer and you need your children to then be farmers, for example. So there are fewer degrees of freedom, perhaps, and fewer degrees of assurance in those situations about what the employment life will be like. So that was one of your questions. Do I think it's specific? And I don't think it's specific to America. I think we have to be careful. I mean, the United States of America is a very pluralistic, very, very diverse country, and people come from all kinds of different family backgrounds. And in some families and in some cultures and communities, it's a terrific question to ask. It's a conversation starter, like at the Boys and Girls Club, right? But in other families, it's just not a question that's asked. And I don't think we can easily say America or not. So, for example, for me growing up, and it was years ago by now, but, you know, there are families like mine now, I imagine, like the family I grew up in, nobody ever asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up at all. And this was a very loving, warm family, and they expected I would go to college. But by the time it was time for me to apply to college, I thought, well, why would I want to do that? I don't even, you know, really have any career aspirations. Mm. Why would I do this?
Yeah, Kristen, what do you think?
Well, I think that a lot of the conversations that we've been talking about do start in some of the more formal settings that our kids are in. For instance, school or a program, a structured program like the Boys and Girls Club. I think it's very common to get those questions in that kind of setting. And then some families, I agree, some families don't always put that as a priority to ask of their children. But some families do. Some families really encourage, really, we talked about earlier, when imagination starts, and I agree, it kind of starts when we have language. When we start to have language, I think, is when we can have the ability to start talking about what we want to do as we get older. So I see it kind of both informally in families and then formally with our structured programs and in our school system.
Kristen, you work as a social worker. You're a licensed clinical social worker, particularly in adolescent behavioral health in Decatur. And you've been listening, as you said, as we've been having this conversation. And I know you primarily work with slightly older children, preteens to teens, some of whom are going through some really difficult, rough times. And I wanted to ask you what you think the challenges teenagers face when it comes to not just achieving goals, but pursuing their dreams.
I think that's a really important question to ask, especially when we're talking about preteens and adolescents. There are kids in every community, I think, that struggle with some really basic things that some other families might not always think about. One thing that I see with a lot of kids that I work with is that their vision of the future doesn't have a whole lot of expansive time in front of it. They're more worried about what's going to happen in the next week or the next month or maybe even the end of the school year rather than what's going to happen in a big picture sense, because there are such anxieties and real-life worries that are placed in front of them, whether it be in the family system or in the broader community. So I think that's a barrier. We have some kids in this world who have very adult worries and concerns, and that can certainly be a challenge when we look at the broader picture of what a child's aspirations would be.
Thanks for that, because I think we saw that, especially when we were speaking to teenagers at the Boys and Girls Club, and we sat down and talked to them about a few things, and I wanted to play a little bit of that conversation.
Hi, my name is Kuvajane. I want to be a hairstylist and a photographer.
Hi, my name is Dejane, and I want to be a kindergarten teacher to help other kids get a good education for them to grow up and try to do something they like and want to be and follow their dreams.
Hi, my name is Sally, and I want to be an actor and a fashion designer.
Hi, my name is Jeremiah, and I want to go to the NBA.
I think the American dream is to have equal rights and be able to do anything.
Following your dreams and being able to do what you want to do.
Things are changing because, like, a whole bunch of people are not getting education and going to school. A lot of people are getting poor because they don't have education, which they need to go to school for education and get a degree in college. That's what I think.
So interesting to hear them say that. And Rob, I'd love to have you weigh in, because obviously we're adults talking to teenagers. We have a microphone in front of them. They're like everybody when you put a microphone in front of them, right? They're all going to say, there's always going to be a little bit of, this is what I want that person, well, this is what I think I should say. But I wonder what you think about, as you're hearing them talk very realistically about challenges and what they're seeing. It reminds me of what Kristen was saying about challenges, where they're saying, look, people are getting poorer. We're seeing that around us. And we think education is important. I wonder what your reaction is to some of the messages, and if you think that with the things you are trying, the values I think you guys like to talk about with the kids, with education, if you think that's being instilled.
You know, I'd have to agree with Kristen, especially when you get into to preteens and teens. You know, they have a pretty good grasp of you know, their own lives and lives of the people that they interact with, and you know, with a lot of single household families. A lot of times those kids take on responsibilities that maybe normally others would not have to take on. I don't always think that's fair to them, because they tend to have to grow up a lot quicker. And sometimes I think what they see is, you know, past generations have done the same thing, and they tend to lose maybe their dreams and their aspirations because of the fact that they're involved in just everyday life. Just moving from one day to the next. But they also, some of them also understand that, you know, they want to do more than what they see in their family dynamics as well.
Kristen, what role do you think external forces play, particularly with preteens and what they're seeing in terms of barriers and challenges to maybe achieving dreams?
I think there's a lot of outside forces that definitely have a pull on kids these days, certainly. Especially with the kids that are of this age group, preteens and adolescents, this is kind of the natural time for kids to not just pull away from, but tend to explore other areas in the world besides their family. They look to peers, certainly they look to media, and in the world that we live in today, there's a lot of media to consume, right? It's not just television and movies, it's constantly coming at them on the internet. And I think in one way, it's positive to have a lot of exposure to different ideas and different things that maybe they don't see in their own lives. But at the same time, those influences, especially of media, can be very overwhelming. For a lot of kids, the things that we see in the media are not super realistic, whether it's not available in their area, or they know that it's not within their family's means to explore any certain kind of activity or area of interest that they have. But there can be some really positive conversations that come from that as well. And I really like what your listener tweeted in, just to say to listen, because I think there is a place for concerned and interested in adults to be curious with these kids and teenagers and say, hey, what are you thinking about when you get older? What's important to you? What do you want to do? What's interesting to you? How do you like to spend your time? I think we can sort of mitigate these influences by being curious with the kids that we care for in our lives.
Sandra, I was going to ask you about that. Do you think that parents and adults in kids' lives maybe need to slow down a little bit and maybe make more of an effort to listen rather than certainly we know that there are some parents who are or other adults who are projecting and sort of steering kids in a direction that we think they should go rather than just listening to them about where they're at right now?
I think that's a terrific question. I think in general, if a parent has the time, then definitely slowing down the push toward attaining and achieving, especially in the years, certainly in the years that I'm most expert in, the years from preschool up to the school age times, there's just no rush in getting better at some, I believe, in some sort of school-based capacity. But there's no trouble being in a extracurricular program, but let's be sure that we talk to the kids about what they like about it and why they like it and, you know, what they think about that teacher or about that parent who also brings their kid to the program. That is to round out the ways that we help our children to become sort of connoisseurs of their own lives and not just book learning and learning from media, but learning from the important other people around them and us listening to them as part of that, I'd say for sure.
Rob, I wanted to ask you, and I want to ask all of you this question, what role do you think adults should be playing in supporting children in dreams and aspirations, regardless of their age?
Well, I think there's a lot of mentoring that has to go on in a lot of different ways. It's kind of a broad subject. You know, a lot depends on the age, but, you know, I think also, you know, kids being able to see adults and what they've done, and then maybe adults being able to, you know, mentor them through their own experiences and things that they've learned. And that's not always easy for a child to look at that and learn from it. But I think, you know, adults teaching other things besides just, you know, your dream, you know, things such as social skills and goal setting and you know, conflict resolution, those are all things that all lead up to, you know, your dream. Because if you're going to be a policeman or you're going to be a teacher or you're going to be a psychologist or a social worker or an executive director, there are a lot of different things that come with that type of position. It's not all just about education, but it's also about learning the other things, social skills to do those things.
Rob, when we're thinking about mentoring, and I'm thinking about how important you think it is when you're thinking about mentoring children, how important it is that to have a long-term relationship for mentoring? Do you think that's important?
I think it's huge. You know, that's one of the things we talk about at the club is not just our average daily attendance, but, you know, how often we can get the same kids to come back each year. You know, we have a school year program and we have a summer program, and a lot of the times our school kids, you know, aren't necessarily all the ones that we get during the summer. And I think that constant, you know, feedback from, you know, program assistants and staff members and adults is important for building a relationship so that there's trust. Because you can sit there and tell a child something for 4 or 5 months, and then, you know, when you're not there, when they're not around, it's not something that's going to stick. So you have to have constant contact with them, I think, for them to understand what you're saying, for that to become a part of their decision-making process in their lives.
Kristen, what about you? What role do you think, what role would you like to see adults playing more, especially as I'm thinking about the teenagers that you're working with who are having some really difficult issues that they're grappling with? I wonder if you would also agree with Rob and say trust, you think, is the most important thing.
Absolutely. Trust, relationship building, knowing that there's somebody who is willing to just sit and listen and be interested in your life. That mentorship that Rob was talking about, I think, is such an important part of what we can offer to our kids, and not necessarily just the kids in our own families, too. I work with a lot of kids who have very broad support systems. It's not just a family member, but maybe it's someone through church or someone at school or someone in the neighborhood who has taken a particular interest in this child. I think we owe it to the kids in our lives to be good role models and to be a good example for them, but also just to be open and interested and encouraging that when a child comes to us or an adolescent comes to us with questions, that we sit down and take the time to answer those questions and to ask our own questions back, to reflect back to those kids, what are you thinking? Your opinion is important to me. What are you thinking about these things as well? I think the more often we can start the discussion, the more interest that we spark with our kids and adolescents.
Rob, we just have a minute left, but I know that your club recently lost a $40,000 grant as a result of the state budget impasse for a teen program. I know you've decided to pull resources from other places to keep it going. Just really quickly, as we sum up this conversation, I wonder if you could tell us why you think that's so important to keep doing.
Well, you know, something I think that there are all levels of formative years for children, and I do agree that, you know, young ages are important too, and I know a lot of our political figures believe that that's probably the most important age, but I'd have to say that when you start to get into your preteen and your teen ages, you know, you're getting into ages that really are starting to get concrete decisions made about what they want to do, what type of community member are they going to end up being. Not just what their dream is going to be and what they're going to try to do as far as going to school or not going to school or getting in technical.
But lots education. Of things. Thanks so much for that, Rob. Thank you. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Yesterday, there was lots of news about the Federal Reserve. If you were paying attention, you heard Fed Chair Janet Yellen's name in the news, mostly for whether or not there would be an interest rate hike. But one group recently met with the Federal Reserve, and led by the National Urban League, they met to voice concern about the lack of diversity among Federal Reserve banking officials. The Federal Reserve has never had an African-American regional vice president, and combined African-Americans and Latinos make up just 9% of the senior-level officers of the Federal Reserve. Joining us to talk about this issue is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, Sherry Runner. She just took the helm of the organization officially in January, so we also want to talk to her about what she wants to achieve as head of one of the state's leading civic groups, which also celebrates its 100th anniversary next month. Sherry, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Nyla. Nice to be here.
Let's start with the issue of the Federal Reserve. Why did the National Urban League take this on?
There is a pervasive problem, not just with the Federal Reserve, but with all financial services in terms of diversity. In Chicago, it's been recognized, and the Federal Reserve is spearheading an effort with a lot of our local financial institutions to find the pipeline of African Americans and Latinos who will come up and be ready to take those roles as they mature in their careers. So it's very important that as a community that we have a seat at the table as it relates to what's going on with financial practice and with issues that that are determined by how finances are administered.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sherry, your background, I know you were a foreign exchange trader for years, and I wonder how important you think diversity in the finance world is important as we're sort of connecting the dots of thinking of what this country has gone through in the past 10 years with the housing crisis and the recession, and how much we've seen African-American and Latino families' wealth disproportionately affected by all of that.
Yeah, no, it's key and critical. You have to have a knowledge about what goes on in terms of finances in order to create wealth in the community. Over the long run, if you are a victim of a predatory loan, you lose all of the investment that you have for your family for the future. We know that this happened in Chicago many years ago when African Americans were migrating north, and the Contract Buyers League addressed that problem. And so it's been a long-term problem. It's had a lot of different names: redlining, reverse redlining, predatory lending. It's had a lot of different names, and it's very important because we know that African Americans are not creating wealth and being able to pass along to future generations the things that they need to in order for that to happen.
I know that you all have been doing research looking at residential segregation in Chicago, and in particular the Chicago Urban League, as you're talking about redlining and all of this, the historic situation regarding housing in Chicago. I know you all have identified 19 communities that haven't seen resources in decades, and you've described Chicago in many ways as a city of different deserts. What do you mean by that?
Well, there are about 30 communities that are primarily African-American in the city of Chicago. Those communities are the same communities that have been traditionally African-American since the migration, which over 100 years ago. 19 of these communities are high-poverty communities where there are absolutely no resources. So not only are they food deserts, they're transportation deserts, they're healthcare deserts, the educational opportunity and resources there are not very good, and that creates generational poverty. It's not something that creates a long-term good outlook for those communities.
Well, there's a line in the report where you say where one grows up has potentially everything to do with one's success.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, do you think it's hard for people outside of these neighborhoods to understand how much lifelong employment, education, and other opportunities are affected by where you live?
Oh, I absolutely think that's very difficult, because if you have it, if you're in a privileged position, it's very difficult for you to understand what equity looks like. You think that that may or may not be the resources that are going to your community may have to come to someone else's community. So I think it's very difficult for people to understand that, and it's something that we're working on consistently. This issue of race and inequity is one that we have to have a very honest, hard conversation about, especially given our current political situation, and especially given the fact that we know that we have 47% of our 20 to 24-year-old young men in Chicago unemployed. And that doesn't just happen by chance. That happens when a series of things follow, and that includes bad educational systems, and that includes lack of access to jobs and training.
I wanted to ask you particularly about educational systems. I know at one point the Chicago Urban League had filed a lawsuit against the State Board of Education regarding school funding. And I want to think about, especially as you mentioned the current budget situation, we're facing a question of whether K through 12 public schools throughout the state will even have funding to open this fall. What do you all think as an organization needs to be done about this?
Well, I think the very first thing that needs to be done about it is that our legislators need to do their jobs and understand that when they don't do their jobs, it's really on the back of the poor people in the state. The poor people happen to be primarily African American and Latino. Those resources that we're talking about in terms of the allocation of resources from the State Board of Education need to be fairly distributed, and we know that places where there's high poverty need more resources than places where there are not, where there is not. And so we're hoping that very soon, this lawsuit has been tried for 9 years, that we will come to settlement with the State Board of Education, because I think everybody knows that the state of things as they are is not equitable, and it's a civil rights violation.
When you say it's a civil rights violation, I think that's an interesting term that maybe people may not necessarily associate with education. Can you explain that?
Well, everybody has the right to a free education. And when you are under-resourcing certain communities based on an impractical and unfair allocation system of the funds that are available for education statewide, when poorer communities, just by the fact of the way that these resources are distributed, get less, then that becomes a civil rights issue.
I'm speaking with Sherry Runner. She's the CEO and president of the Chicago Urban League. You know, Sherry, as you're thinking, we're talking about race, and you're thinking about saying, you know, we really need to be having honest and open conversations about this. I wanted to ask you, I think we always, it's summertime now, we sort of have this Monday morning routine throughout Illinois, which is somewhat horrific in my mind, because we're hearing headlines and tolls of numbers of how many people in Chicago were shot and killed over the weekend. And I wanted to ask you what you want people outside of Chicago to think about when they're hearing those headlines?
Well, I think it's a tragic situation in Chicago. It's a crisis situation. We have to do a couple of things. One is we know that there are guns being trafficked into Chicago by some mechanism, and it's almost akin to the kinds of things that were happening in the 50s and 60s with drugs. And those guns and those drugs are ending up in African-American communities primarily. We need to decouple the trafficking issue from the gun ownership issue and really take a hard look at why this is happening and how we can stop that. And that's a law enforcement issue, and it's not just the Chicago police. It's the federal law enforcement as well. Those cases need to be tried, and those guns need to stop coming into Illinois and specifically into Chicago's neighborhoods. It's a problem because it feeds on itself, and many of our young men feel that without a gun, they aren't safe, and they'd rather have a gun on them than be caught without one. That kind of logic isn't very productive, and it leads to those people being highly, highly at risk. And so it's important that people understand that this is an issue that we need to have an urgent look at, and we need to solve quickly. It is unfortunate that people listen to the statistics every Monday morning and become numb and immune to them rather than being outraged and working collectively to try and solve this problem.
Do you think there's enough outrage?
I don't. I think right now or traditional. Well, let me retract. I will say there is outrage. I think that many people in the Chicago area feel like it's not going to affect them. It's not going to impact their communities. But we've seen lately that a lot of this use of illegal guns that are in the city of Chicago has leaked outside of just those African-American communities where people think that this is happening. And it's important that people understand that that is what is going to happen. It is not just limited to African-American communities. This is an issue that we all have to look at and solve.
Go ahead.
I think one of the things that's most important is every year when we hold our Legislative Policy Institute with our legislators and have our youth testify before them, they talk about the fact that they would rather have a job, a legal job, rather than be engaged with the gangs and the drug dealing, because they know that that puts a limit on their lives and their livelihoods. So it's really, really important that everybody understand that jobs are what takes away the bullets and guns.
Mm-hmm. And as we're thinking about jobs and we're thinking about not just Chicago, but maybe other under-resourced areas throughout the state, I mean, what role do you think civic groups like the Urban League can play in helping encourage employment?
Well, I think, you know, we hold a unique place and many other organizations as well in terms of talking to corporate entities, in terms of talking to government entities, and in terms of talking with the community and bringing them together to try and figure out ways where we can get young people in the pipeline to entry-level jobs, which have really shifted. And the manufacturing base has changed dramatically. And so people need certificates. They need all kinds of different training to get those jobs. And as long as we start to have that conversation and make sure that people are aware that this is critical and crucial to stopping the violence in Chicago and to creating a workforce pipeline and a consumer pipeline for all of our corporate entities, then I think we will start to have a conversation about how we can really solve this problem.
Sherry, as we're talking about this, I can't help but think about this being the 100th anniversary of the organization. You mentioned the Great Migration earlier, and I'm thinking about 1916, the Chicago Urban League being founded. I mean, how do you see the mission of the organization changing to reflect these realities and address these needs, particularly of the African-American community?
Well, I think 100 years ago, we were dealing with the root causes of what happens when people migrate from a rural economy to a city. We have to now shift what we're doing. We've treated symptoms for a long time that evolved over a period of time. We look at violence as a symptom of something that happens, which is joblessness and generational poverty. I think that when, as we enter our 100th year, we're really looking to solve the issues that are the root causes of the inequality in income and inequality in joblessness. And those things are a superb or better educational system. Those things are creating generational wealth. Those things are making sure that jobs are available for all the citizens of the city of Chicago and not just a defined group.
And how much do you think all of that is being threatened by this current budget impasse?
Oh, all of it's being threatened. I mean, if the schools don't open in the fall, that is counterproductive. I mean, it makes no sense. And again, I think that our legislators have to do their job. They cannot let that happen. That can impact people for generations to come.
Sherry Runner is CEO of the Chicago Urban League, president and CEO. Sherry, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Niala.
Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, we are going to be speaking to two doctors in Illinois who are going to be talking about their book. It's called Listening for What Matters. They wrote the book for doctors and for how doctors can sort of be better listeners. But we're going to turn the conversation around a little bit and hear what patients can do to better their own care if they feel their healthcare providers aren't listening to them. You can always find past shows for us on the NPR One app. You can search for the 21st there. We're also available on iTunes and Androids. All of those links and ways to contact us, we love hearing feedback from you, whether you want to leave us a voicemail, call, you can tweet us. All of that information is on our website at 21stshow.org. That's www.21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Ben Thomas Payne, and Travis Stancil. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft, with help today from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.